Well, let me start. Let me ask. Last night, I think we only saw two things in all the time that we were together. Basically, what was the first thing that we saw? That we're different. How different are we, men and women? Real different. Is the society accepting that? Or is it trying to change it? It's trying to change it. Is it working pretty hard at trying to change it? Yeah, from what we saw last night, are they going to be able to accomplish it? No, they're not going to be able to accomplish it. But something's going to happen, isn't it? Because they're really working. What are they really doing? They're not creating women into men. What are they doing? They're just ruining our women. They're losing what a woman is, and they're just making her tough and on and on and on. And also we're losing our men, too, as a matter of fact. But we're turning into men-women or women-men, but we're not getting anything different. We're losing is what we're doing. Okay, also, what else do we see about the purpose of marriage? What did I propose to you about the purpose of marriage? To reflect the very image of God. That's pretty high, isn't it? If that were true, that would be pretty high, wouldn't it? And you'll have to decide if it's true. I think it is, but you'll have to decide that for yourself. Okay, if the purpose of marriage is to accomplish to reflect the very image of God, and if you're going to be held accountable for that, if that happens to be true, would you like to learn how to do that? You'd like to learn how to accomplish that, maybe? Well, you could take a shot at it, see if you can accomplish it. Let's look at that, then, on page 11. What's that?
Don't I need my wife to do
this? This is interesting. He said, doesn't he need his wife to do that? The answer is going to be no. She doesn't need to be here. Really neat. Really neat. And I think you'll see that by the time the evening is over. Now, you and I can do about three-quarters of it. It's really amazing. Really amazing. Okay. Yeah, we want to go ahead and look see, how is the purpose of marriage accomplished? To do that, we need to realize that we have to do something about our roles and responsibility. The answer is so simple that quite often we skip past it. The answer is just too simple. What is it that we have to do about our roles and responsibilities? What? Not maximize them, not accept them. See, I told you it's too simple. Recognize, not do them. You have to recognize them. You have to learn what they are. So that's a pretty simple answer, isn't it? We skip by it. But is our society accepting that there are roles and responsibilities separate for men and women anymore? No, that's been taken out. All right? So you've got to decide whether they really are. And if they are, then you've got to learn what they are before you can accept them or do them or anything else like that. Quite often, I've had this particular course turned down when I will call a church over the telephone and I'll ask them if they'd be interested in talking about the course that I have here. And on the phone, they said, no, we're not interested in having your seminar. And I said, well, golly, that's a pretty fast decision. You haven't even met me. How can you say that so fast? And they said, well, it's by the name of the seminar. It's called The Role of the Man in the Family. Everybody knows there's no roles for men and women anymore. Wow. Some of these were good churches. I was kind of amazed. They've been intimidated by the society to believe that there are no separate roles for men and women. So you see, you're going to have to make a decision. You're going to have to decide, hey, do I really have roles for myself as a man or not? Society's going to tell you you don't. I'm proposing that we do. All right, they're still there. So I'm going to propose that we have to learn what our roles and responsibilities are. Now, after that, we have to obediently do something with them as they apply to you. If you do discover roles and responsibilities for yourself, then you have to obediently do something. And the answer is super simple. What is it? Yeah, you have to practice it. Obediently practice as they apply to you. All right? That sounds real simple, but it's pretty important, actually. Now, why did I bother to put the word obediently on the front? Why didn't I just say, practice them as they apply to you? That would make sense, right? I mean, that's enough. Why did I bother to put the word obediently on the front? Actually, it's very, very important. Well, motivation, that has a little bit to do with it, but what about motivation? Why did I have to put the word obediently on the front? Obediently practice the roles and responsibility as they apply to you. Why do I have to put that word on the front? Well, God commanded it, but that's not why I have to put it on.
To be a simple person.
Not to be a simple person. I'm sorry, I'm going to take time on this because we need to think this through. Why did I have to put the word obediently practice them? And the answer is pretty obvious, but we miss it. Can anybody guess? Why did I have to what's that? It takes discipline. Why does it take discipline? You are correct. And you're correct. It's the commandment of God, oh God, all that. But why do I have to put the word obediently on the front? What's that? We have to submit ourselves, right? You have to practice them obediently. That's okay. That's right. But that's still not the reason. Still not the reason. Now we're moving toward it. What did you say? Oh, he said they're not natural to us. Our nature is not to do them. Gentlemen, quite often, when you uncover what you're supposed to do, guess what your attitude is? I don't want to do it. How many of you know have known that you have done that? That you have found out what you're supposed to do, and your answer to God has been what? No, I won't do it. Quite often, the roles are very uncomfortable. And our first response is, no, I'm not going to do it, as a matter of fact. And so that's where obediently comes in there. You don't have to like it, you just have to do it. Very, very important. And quite often, when you find out what your role or responsibility is, you won't like it at first. Let me show you how that works out. Unfortunately, I had to work out in my own life. How many of you men know that you have a wife that likes to be called in the afternoon from work? Okay, probably more of you do, you just don't know it. Okay, now, how many of you men do not want to call your wife in the afternoon from work? I don't want to do it. I want to work. I don't want to bother calling her. However, you know, if you've got a wife, if you've been issued a wife that needs to be called in the afternoon, guess what God wants you to do? He'd like you to call her in the afternoon. Well, several years ago, I was made aware that I had the model that likes to be called in the afternoon. And God made me fully aware of that, that would be good for me to call her in the afternoon. Now, at that time, can anybody guess what I told God when he informed me that it would be good for me to call my wife? I think maybe you're getting to know me a little bit well enough now. What did I answer?
No,
I'm not going to do it. Now, I wasn't quite so bold as that. I mean, I smoothed it over a little bit better, so it looked better than that. I was going to seminary at the time, and what I pointed out to God, I said, oh, God, I'd be pleased to do it. I just can't afford to do it. Now, doesn't that sound a lot better? I mean, I just don't have the money for the payphone there. Now, that sounds a lot better, don't you think? And the payphone happened to be in the donut shop at the seminary, and each day I would sit there, and I would munch on my donut, and I would drink my coffee, and I'd point out to God, I just don't have the money to call my wife.
But you have money to drink.
Yeah, coffee. You figured it out, Fosse. Do you understand? I never saw the problem with that. I thought I was pretty smooth. Well, God has a good sense of humor, I think. And a few weeks later, the seminary did a very unusual thing. They took out the payphone and put in a free phone.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? That never happened. Well, now we got down to the bottom line, what had been true all the time. I said to God, no, I won't do it. Now, that had always been the truth, you understand? But I'd had this excuse before. I just won't do it. Well, God kept the pressure on me for weeks. I mean, I held out pretty well. But finally, he just kept the pressure that I should do it. So finally, one day I said, oh, all right, I'll do it. My faith is a little bit rough. But anyway, I got up there, and I remember the first day I almost broke my finger. I'm dialing the phone or pushing the button. Boom, 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 boom. I mean, it was like that. Hit that phone. My wife, hello. That's all I could get out. My wife said, oh, it's you. Yeah, okay, got to go. Now, gentlemen, did I get any points for attitude in that whole thing? No, from what I'm telling you, I got no points for attitude. I only got points for what? I did it. I did do it after a fashion, all right? Now, I got home that afternoon. My wife was waiting for me in the driveway. Oh, I'm so happy you called me. Really appreciate it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, now, if you're supposed to call your wife in the afternoon, how many times are you supposed to call your wife in the afternoon? Does once per year count? Now, that won't do it. You're supposed to do it most every afternoon. So the next afternoon, I had to do the very same thing. I almost broke the finger again. Okay. Well, anyway, I did it. I was at least obedient, if nothing else. That's all I did. I called. Now, I kept this up. About the third week, I improved. I really had an improvement, and I was pretty pleased. I got to where I could actually have a limber finger. Isn't that neat? I got to where I could dial like a normal human being. I was pretty impressed. Hey, boy, I'm really moving along. Now, the fifth week, I really improved even more. I got to where I could interact, really. She would say, blah, blah, blah. I'd go, gotta go. The gentleman, I thought that was moving along. I mean, really moving. Now, I kept this up. Finally, the ninth week, and a very embarrassing thing happened, or at least I thought it was embarrassing after I made this big issue about why I shouldn't have to call my wife. I got to where I looked forward to it. That was embarrassing after I'd pointed out to God why I shouldn't have to do it. I got to where I really liked it. I mean, I started pushing guys out of the way. Excuse me, I got to call my wife. Get away, you know, grab them, pick it up, and oh, how you doing? You know, we had a great time. Now, that was real neat. But let me ask you, to get to the joy of the ninth week, does anybody know what I had to do? To keep being obedient and put up with the trouble, right? That's not the answer, quite. What's the answer? To get to the joy of the ninth week, what did I have to do? I mean, these are the answers we think about, but the answer is so simple, you got to hit it. And I think you got it. What was it? Not practice. Mm-mm, that's not the answer, too. That's not the answer either, the total answer. To get the joy of the ninth week, what did I have to do? When? Had to be obedient. When? Not daily. Mm-mm, not persistent. You're missing the point again. It's okay. We always do. I had to be obedient when, gentlemen? The first day. Do you understand what I'm saying? If I hadn't been obedient the first day, would persistency have counted, come in there? Would consistency have come in there? Would patience have come in there? No, because guess what? If I hadn't started, could you have continued? Gentlemen, the obedience had to start the first day. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the crucial thing. Now, from what I've told you, did I get any points at all for attitude on the first day? No points for attitude. I only got points for one thing. What was it? I did it. And guess what? God was only asking me to do one thing that first day. Guess what it was? Simply what? Do it. I'm going to propose to you that at first, when you understand what you're supposed to do, at first your attitude is not crucial. That's a little bit controversial, not terribly. But I'm going to propose to you that God can handle it if you don't have a good attitude. He really doesn't fold if you don't have a good attitude. He only really asks you one thing. When he asks you to do something, he only asks one thing. What is it? Not whether you're going to like it or not. What is it? Are you going to do it or not? That's the issue. All right? You can grumble, you can mumble, but God says, are you going to start or not? Now, that's not hard to see. Jesus told a parable about a father with two sons. And he came to the first son and said, son, I'd like you to go to the fields. And the son said, happy to do it. He just didn't go. And the father came to the next son and said, son, I'd like you to go to the fields. And he said, no, I won't do it. But he went. And Jesus asked, which one of the sons was most pleasing to the father? The one with a great attitude who didn't do what he was supposed to, or the one with a bad attitude who went and did what he'd been asked? Which one was most pleasing to the father?
It
was one with a bad attitude that what? Did what he was supposed to do. And gentlemen, that's what I'm going to propose. When you and I find out what our roles and responsibilities are, God can handle it if you don't like it. He can handle that. He only asks you to do one thing, and that is, are you going to do it or not? That's it. And if you do it, he's very pleased. He wants your attitude to come around someday, but that's not crucial at first. You can mumble and you can grumble. He just asks the one thing, what? Are you going to take the first step? That's all. Okay. Now, with that in mind, then, let's find out what our roles and responsibilities are, all right? We have primary roles, males and females do. What is the primary role of a female that I suggested to you last night, the thing that she wants to be? It starts with an H in the world. She's designed to be a helper in the world. Females are designed to be a helper. A woman feels best when she is helping people. Doesn't matter whether it's helping in the home, in the office, in the community, in the church. Doesn't matter. A female wants to help. In fact, she feels frustrated and really gets upset when she cannot help. Okay, that's her primary role. What is a male's primary role? It also starts with an H. It's to serve as the what? As the head. A male's primary role in life is to serve as a head. All right? That's rather controversial, so I would like to handle that directly. If you look on the other page, and if you look in the book of 1 Corinthians, I'd like to see if this really is God's plan for the male to act as the head. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3. We're going to be looking at something here that I'm going to propose as God's system for family security. This is how he wants the family to be run if the family is supposed to enjoy security and peace and stability. If you run your family the way this verse says, then your family will have those good things. If you do not run your family the way this verse says, then your family will have insecurity, instability, anger, resentment, and on and on and on. That's pretty serious if that's true, isn't it? We've got to either run it this way or run it the other way, and we'll have a lot of negative consequences. Look in verse 3, it says, but I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, and the man is the head of the woman, and God is the head of Christ. Okay, tell me, who is the head of who there? Give me this, somebody who's the head of somebody else in that verse. God is the head of who? Christ. Who else is the head of somebody? Christ is the head of the man. And finally, the man is the head of the woman. Okay. Let me ask, is this a reasonable way to diagram that particular verse? Is that a reasonable diagram of that verse? Does that seem to outline it fairly clearly? Yeah, I would think so. It's a pretty simple verse. Now, does our society buy that concept? No. Is our society actively hostile to that concept? It's actively hostile. However, is the verse very clear in what it's saying? That this is what God wants? Yeah. So, you are going to have to make a decision. You're either going to live the way society says, which is to have multiple heads or anybody be the head, or you're going to live the way God says right here, which is that you have one head and it is the male. All right? You can't mix it. It's one way or the other. That's it, in your family. You got to pick. Now, let's see what this means. This has been called the chain of what? This system has been called the chain of what? The chain of command. Is that a reasonable name for that system? Is that a reasonable name? I would say so. It's technically reasonable. Technically correct. However, I'm going to do something rather bold here. I'm going to propose that we get rid of that name. Now, gentlemen, I'm not against Bill Gothard, who has popularized that concept at all. I've learned quite a bit from him. And that's a technically correct name. But I don't think it's broad enough to show us what's happening in this particular verse. I propose that we call it the chain of something else. The chain of what? Can anybody guess? Yes, the chain of responsibility. The chain of responsibility. Okay? I think that would be a better name, a more accurate name for what's happening in this particular verse. Let's see what that means. Basically, what it means then is that the one under is responsible to do the will of the one over. Okay? That's the chain of command part. However, it also means that the one over is responsible to meet all the needs of the one under. Well, that changes things a little bit, doesn't it? Goes two ways. Let's see how that works out. Let's take a master-slave relationship. What is the slave responsible to do? Simply what? Whatever the master says. Isn't that right? However, what is the master responsible for? To provide what? Food, clothing, housing, and protection. You understand? He's responsible to meet all the needs of the slave. Jesus lived this way. He was unashamed to say, I don't do anything but what? What did he say? I don't do anything but what? What the Father tells me to do. Isn't that amazing? However, did he worry about anything for himself? Did he worry about his food or his clothing? No. Who was responsible for that? The Father. What about his protection? What did he say? My Father has 10,000 angels. Who is responsible to protect him? His head. You understand? His Father. Gentlemen, if you want to use this verse to propose that your wife is supposed to be submissive to you, guess what? You can use it that way, because that's what it's teaching. However, you can't buy just half the verse. That's not fair. The verse goes two ways, and you have to buy the other side also. And that is, you have to be willing, if you're going to use this verse, you have to be willing to meet all her needs first. And then someday, maybe she'll be submissive to you. Do you still want to use this verse? Or maybe it's not so good anymore, is it? But anyway, do you see what I'm talking about with this verse? It goes two ways. Now also, this verse is not talking at all about you telling your wife to be submissive to you. That's between her and who? Not you. That's between her and God. It doesn't have anything to do with you, as a matter of fact. Isn't that amazing? You're not responsible to tell your wife that she's supposed to be submissive to you. That's not your job. That's God's job. This verse only tells you one thing. What is it? That you're supposed to meet her needs. That's all. All right? Pretty big deal. So, that's what it means. You and I, we are the head. That's our primary role, is to serve as the head, which means we serve the ones who are under us. All right? Pretty interesting, I would say. Now, down here, does this say wife? Does it say that the man is the head of the wife? No, it doesn't. It says what? It's the head of the woman. Guess what I think it means? I think it means that. This is not restricted to a family at all. What I think it means is that God's desire is that every woman always had the privilege of a head. That's God's desire. This is not restricted only to a family at all. His desire is that every woman always had the privilege of a head. A head is a great thing to have. Let me show you how that works out. When I was going to seminary, I had a professor there who grew up in a Mennonite community. Now, in the Mennonite community, were all Mennonites, and the church was Mennonites. I mean, the church was the community, and the community was the church. They were all Mennonites. Now, when he was about 12, apparently, his father died and left he and his older brother alone with their mom, a widowed mom. Well, when that happened, the church got together and did what they normally did in such a situation. They got together and had a meeting, and they selected three older men to be responsible for that home, which meant that if a rain came and the roof began leaking, guess what the widow was supposed to do? She was supposed to call one of those men and say, excuse me, my roof is leaking. As soon as the rain was over, he was supposed to get over there and find out what the problem was. If it needed to be repaired, she was responsible to get the money to pay for the materials. She had to work and do that. However, they were responsible to go to the store, figure out which materials were needed, buy them, bring them back, and have the roof fixed. Is that a good deal for the woman? I'd say it's a pretty good deal for the woman. If one night the hot water heater went out, guess what she was supposed to do before the church? Call one of the men and say, excuse me, my hot water heater's out. Guess what he was supposed to do? Get over there and find out what the problem was. If it had just blown out, he was to get it restarted and show her how to do it. Or else, if it was gone, he was supposed to go down with her money, get the new hot water heater, bring it back, and have it installed. Is that a good deal for the woman? I'd say it's a pretty good deal for the woman. Guess what? Now, if she decided that her sons were supposed to be taken fishing, needed to be taken fishing, guess what she was supposed to do? No. She was supposed to call one of the men. No. Oh, she could do that, but it's important to have boys go out with men, isn't it? She's supposed to call one of the older men and say, excuse me, I think my sons need to be taken fishing. Guess what they were responsible to do before the church? The church held them accountable for this. Guess what they were supposed to do? Say, okay, I can make time two Saturdays from now. Is that a good deal for the boys? That's a great deal for the boys. Gentlemen, that's what it means. God wants a woman to always have the privilege of a head. It's a great deal. Okay? That's the deal. You and I are to serve as the head. Sometimes that means in our family. Sometimes it also means a little bit outside of our family also. Let me also mention this, and I can't go into this too much. There are two parts of headship. One is having authority over people, and the other is providing serving. All right? This has come up sometimes, particularly with young men, with men whose mothers have been left alone, and they're trying to wonder how they're supposed to provide headship. Well, you don't ever have authority over your mother. However, you do have the responsibility to provide a certain amount of headship. What part is it? It's the serving. Isn't that neat? That's really precious, gentlemen, but you're not responsible to tell her what to do. But you are responsible to give her service. Oh, golly, that's fantastic. I think God's plan is so neat that a woman is always to be served by a head. Wow. Now, let's see. What is society's chief argument why they say this cannot be true? Because they say, if you say that someone is under another person, what are you saying? You're saying that they are inferior or less. I'm so thankful the answer to that argument is right here in this verse. Because if you say being under makes you less, then guess what you must say about this relationship? You're saying Christ is less than God. Does the Bible allow that in any way? In no way. It just says that Christ is what? Christ is fully God, fully equal with God in value, but he is just simply what? Under. That's all. It just means somebody is responsible for running the show. That's all. Okay? So no, that doesn't hold up. Being under doesn't mean you're less at all. So basically, what this means is God wants you to run your family as a team, whereas the world wants you to run your family as a partnership. There is nothing particularly wrong with a partnership. It's just not what God wants. A partnership is where you have two or more heads, two or more leaders. You understand? And there's nothing wrong with that. There's places for partnerships. You can do it. But it means you have two or more people that can call the shots. However, on a team, how many leaders do you have? You have one. Let's take a football team. The leader of a football team, is he necessarily, if he's a quarterback, fine. Is he necessarily the best player on the team? No. Is he necessarily the smartest person on the team? No. Is he necessarily the fastest player on the team? Is he necessarily the strongest person on the team? No, he didn't have to be any of those things. He's simply the what? He's simply the leader, that's all. There could be other players that are better than he. But what it means is that after he's heard all the discussion, when he makes a decision, what does the whole team do? What he says. You understand what I'm saying? Being the leader doesn't mean you're better in any way. It simply means you're willing to carry the responsibility. That's all. And that's what God wants. He wants one leader. You understand your wife may be more competent than you. That's not the issue at all. She may be a more competent person. But God still wants her to have the privilege of a head. And that's you, gentlemen. That's me. That's your primary role in life, is to be a head. Okay. With that in mind, let's go back to the other page and find out, what does it mean to be a head? What does that mean? And that's not too hard to understand, actually, or to define. Because the primary role of a head anywhere, it doesn't matter, whether it's in the family or in the church or in the business community, same thing, a leader is a leader, all right? The primary role of a head is simply to carry one thing. What is it? A head anywhere only carries responsibility. That's it. That is the definition of a head or a leader, whatever you want to call it, okay? That he simply carries responsibility. That's all. Now, with that in mind, we need to get something in mind pretty quickly. We quite often get this switch. There is something that a leader can delegate, but something else that he cannot delegate. And quite often we get it switched, and we get into a lot of trouble because of that. So we better define that right away. What is it that a leader can delegate? It is authority, yeah. Authority. He can delegate a whole lot of authority, which would be a task. However, what can he not delegate? He cannot delegate responsibility, or he is no longer the leader. Because that's the mark of a leader. All right? Let me show you how that works out. Let's say we have a large national corporation. We have the president that is running that. Let's say the sales begin going down, 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 down. Would that president be authorized normally to hire a sales manager to take care of the sales? Sure, no problem. That would be normal. All right, let's say he goes ahead and hires a sales manager. Now, if he hires that guy, if he sends him out, could he say, hey, look, would you go anywhere in this nation? Whenever you speak, it'll be as though I was speaking. You go in my name, it'll be as though I was speaking. Can he delegate that much authority? Yes, he can. No problem. He's just delegating authority. Could he go so far and say, hey, look, if anybody causes you any trouble whatsoever, if they challenge you at all, it'll be exactly as though they were challenging me. Could he go that far? Sure. He's delegating what? Simply authority. However, let's say the sales manager goes out and starts his job, and the sales keep going down, 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 and I mean, they're off the chart. They're gone. Let me ask, who does the board call in? Who does the board call in? They call in the president, right? They say, hey, What's going on with the sales? Now, if the president says, well, it's the problem, it's the sales manager I hired. You know, he's not doing his job. Do you think the board will say, oh, we're so sorry, we didn't realize that. We're sorry to have bothered you. Will they say that to the president? No, what will they say? Hey, we don't want to hear about a sales manager. We pay you to run this company. Now, you either get the sales up or what? You get out. You understand? He can transfer a lot of authority. What can he not transfer? He cannot transfer responsibility. Gentlemen, that's what it means to be a leader. And you as a head, you can transfer a whole lot of authority, but you cannot transfer responsibility. All right? However, what's happening today is that men are transferring responsibility also. Let me show you how that works out. Let's look at writing checks. I would propose that in a family, it is the man who is responsible for the finances. We'll be looking at that a little bit later on. Now, many men choose to go ahead and have their wife write out the checks and pay all the bills. Is that authorized by God? Yes, it is. Because what's the man transferring? Simply authority to do it. However, most men go farther than that. They transfer the whole ball of wax to the wife. Responsibility and everything. And it's easy to see the first time a check bounces. Then you can figure out what the man's done. Because then what most men do, they come in and they say, hey, what's going on? You're costing us money. What's he transferred to her? He's transferred responsibility and everything. You understand? Let me tell you what a correct man would say under such a situation. If he had the wife paying all the bills and he had a check bounce, he would come and say, excuse me, can you explain to me why I bounced this check? Did you hear that wording? A correct man would come to the woman and say, excuse me, can you explain to me why I bounced this check? Would a woman buy that? What would she say? What do you mean you bounced the check? You didn't even write it. That's stupid. However, by that wording, what is the man accepting? He's accepting responsibility. Do you hear the wording? Is that a pretty good deal for the woman? That if everything goes great, she gets all the credit. If anything goes wrong, the man takes all the blame. Is that a good deal for the woman? That's a good deal for the woman. Are you getting an idea of how responsibility works? That's how it works. All right? What's that?
She's becoming the boss.
Oh, is she the boss? Is the woman the boss under the circumstances? No way. She's not bothered with having to be the boss. We're going to find out that being a boss is a pretty tough position to have to carry. Now, a boss, who's the boss? The one who what? In any sort of organization, the boss is who? The one who carries responsibility. No, she's not the boss, because you're carrying it. That's the deal. She's not stuck with being it. Let me show you another illustration of that. Unfortunately, I had to learn it in my own life, too. I wish I could learn things by reading rather than having to go through these things. But anyway, one time, I took a trip from Wisconsin. We drove down here to Texas. We drove our van down here, a nice little blue and white van. We came down, and while we were down here in Arlington, I got a call from a company up in Denver, and they were interested in possibly hiring me. And they asked if I would fly up for the day for an interview. Well, I thought that was pretty neat, so sure, I'd be happy to do that. Well, I flew up for the day, had my little interview, and then they flew me back in that afternoon. Got back to DFW, got off the plane, was coming down, there's my little family waiting, wife and little kids there, and I say, oh, that's happened so pretty, you know, little wife and family waiting for me, looks great and everything. And I got at my wife smiling, and the kids say, hey, Dad, what did you see what happened to the vote? And I mean, a hand was put right over the kid's mouth. I said, what, kid? And then my wife said, nothing, you're not talking about anything. Are you, child? She took her hand away. Everything's fine, isn't it? It's not. And she began to say, oh, it's so great to have you and everything. I'm sitting there and thinking, you know, what's he talking about? But I thought, hey, so I was into the smooth husband bit. I thought, I'll be a smooth husband. I won't make a big deal out of this. So I'll see what happens here, you know? So we're walking on down the corridor to get the baggage, and my wife's talking to me so happily, and the kids behind me are jumping around saying, wait till he finds out. What's this? Wait till he finds out. You know, I'm sitting there thinking, Vuh, could it be the van that they're talking about, you know? But anyway, I thought, hey, wait a minute. Vans stick up way above every other car. All I have to do is get out in the parking lot very shortly, and I'll be able to see if anything's wrong with it. You know, so I can't wait that long. So I got baggage. We went up to the parking lot, and I quick did a scan. Guess what, gentlemen? No vans. I mean, no vans at all. I look at my wife, and I say, excuse me, where's the van? She looks up at me, and she says, I didn't bring it. I say, what do you mean you didn't bring it? It's the only car we have. And she said, well, I borrowed one from a friend. And I said, oh. Okay, well, I thought I would continue the smooth husband bit, you know, and be unruffled and everything. So we go over and get into the strange car, and I put everything in there, and we're driving off, and as we're going down toward the toll area, I thought of something. Hey, I'm not accomplishing anything by going in the front door. I'll try and go in the back door and see if I learn anything. I thought of something, and I asked her a question. I said, why did you borrow the car? I thought that would surface it. And she looks at me, and she says, it has air conditioning. Oh. Okay, that's right. Yeah. That didn't accomplish anything. So anyway, we get out of the FW, and we're driving on down. We're driving home, and we're talking and everything, and the kids are in the back seat, bouncing off the side. We're going to find out. We're going to find out. We're going to find out. They're having a great time. Well, I'm sitting there, gentlemen. I got to admit to you, about 5 miles into the trip, I just lost my cool. I lost it all. I turned, and I looked at my wife, and I said,
Where's the van? And my wife looked at me and she said, I burned it. And the kid said, she burned it. She burned it. And I said, you did what? I burned it. You burned it. She burned it. And I mean, my sweat popped out. My hands got all sweaty. I'm sitting there. I said, wait a minute, wait a minute. I saw to myself. I said, wait a minute. She's a woman. She doesn't know anything, understand anything about mechanics. It could be some small thing. I looked at her and said, wait a minute. She said, what? I said, is it still on four wheels? And she said, it's on four wheels. I said, is it wrinkled? She said, it's not wrinkled. I said, okay, no problem. No problem. I'll handle it. And I got myself under control again. I said, some small thing, probably. And so anyway, we drove home, and I was pretty proud of myself. I got myself under control. We got there. There's the van sitting in the driveway, pretty blue and white, and, you know, shiny and everything. It looks great to me. So I thought, no problem. Got everything inside, ran around, got my key, and ran in there, stuck the key in the ignition, and turned it. Guess what happened when I did that? Nothing. You know why? She'd burned it. Really burned it. I found out later what had happened from some eyewitnesses who had seen the whole thing. They said it was thrilling. Absolutely thrilling. She was driving an I-35 coming back from Denton, coming back down to Arlington, and they were driving. There were some civilians behind her, and they said that it was, all of a sudden, they noticed this van began to shake violently side to side, and all of a sudden, a huge cloud of black smoke belched out the tailpipe. They said the van swerved over to the side, screeched to a halt, all the doors opened, dogs, kids, adults leaped out of every door, ran over to the ditch, jumped into the ditch, turned around, and waited for it to explode. They said it was thrilling. Absolutely thrilling. Oh, they loved it. Now, we found out later on what had happened. The water pump had malfunctioned, and all the water had drained out of the engine at 55 miles an hour. Gentlemen, she'd burned it. I mean, really burned it. The mechanic took the heads off later on, and there was a crack that big in the block. Now, I had a basic problem then. Because who do you think I think is responsible for auto maintenance in a home? I think the male is responsible for auto maintenance. Therefore, by my own teaching, who was responsible for that van burning up? Gentlemen, by my own teaching, I was. Now, I will be honest with you. It took me 3 days to work that out, all right? I had to wrestle with that a little bit. But finally, after 3 days, I finally bought it. And I came to my wife on the third day and said, look, I don't want to discuss it. I just want to tell you, I burned the van. She looked at me and said, that's stupid. You weren't even there. I said, I don't want to talk about it. I'd have burned it, all right? Now, by that wording, what was I accepting? All I was doing was accepting responsibility. That's all. All right? Is that a good deal for the woman? I say that's a pretty good deal for the woman. If the vehicle runs, no problem. If it breaks, who gets all the problem? The man does. That's a pretty good deal for her. Was that a bad deal for me? I don't think so, actually. Did I go on a guilt trip because the van burned up? No. It was just normal wear and tear. I couldn't know that it was going to go out. All right? By accepting responsibility, all I was saying, hey, I'm not going to hold you accountable, and I'll have it fixed. That's a great deal for the woman. Okay, now this illustration quite often twists a lot of men, really tears you up. You don't like it. How many of you are sitting there and saying, oh, good grief, you should have at least looked at the temperature gauge? Gentlemen, let's have a show of hands. Anybody think of it? Sure, okay. Gentlemen, I'm not stupid. I thought of the same thing, all right? So as soon as I got that van fixed, I checked to see how many times I look at the temperature gauge when I'm driving. Guess how many times I look at the temperature gauge when I'm driving? I never look at the temperature gauge when I'm driving. All right? So if I wanted my wife to look at the temperature gauge when she's driving, what was I responsible to do? Teach her. And I didn't do it. Do you understand? Are you beginning to see this terrible principle? It's really disgusting. You and I, as the head, are responsible. Is that a good deal for the wife? I say it's a great deal for the wife. If everything works out, she gets all the credit. If anything goes wrong, what happens? The fellow accepts all the blame. Now, I didn't go on a guilt trip on that. All I did was just accept the responsibility to have it fixed. That's a great deal for her. But I think you're getting the idea, all right? Now, that's what it means. It simply means that you accept the responsibility as a head. Let's see how that works out in a corporation or in an organization anywhere. If you are the leader, let's see how that does work out. If you have an organization, are you getting an idea of how this works out? You are responsible to be able to pull these things out of your wife. Isn't that amazing? Let me give you another one. This is fairly important. One time when I was in business out here in Arlington, I decided that I would buy my wife a brand new car. And so I went to downtown Dallas, and I bought her a brand new car. I mean, off the showroom floor. Drove that baby out, red Mustang convertible, white top, white interior. Woo! Drove that thing home, and it was not even a toy for me. I had my own brand new car right next to it, and I really liked that. Got home, pulled in, ran inside, said, hey, wife, come on out, see what I got you. And she came out there, and I said, what do you think? And she looked at it, and she said, that's very nice. I said, what do you mean very nice? That's a very expensive car. She said, it's very nice. I thought, well, maybe she's overwhelmed. I'll give her a week or so and we'll see what happens. So anyway, we went on, and a week later I came back and said, well, what do you think about the car, huh? What do you think? She said, it's very nice. So what do you mean very nice? That cost me a lot of money. It's better than very nice. She said, I said, it's very nice. Well, months went by, and I never got better than a very nice. So after a few months, I sold the thing. It just wasn't worth having. Well, a little while later, we took a trip down to Mexico, and we were down there for about a month or so. And one day, I had to go into the store to get the food, and while I was there, I happened to notice that a bathing suit was for sale there. I thought, oh, my wife forgot to bring her bathing suit. I'll get her bathing suit. Isn't that nice for a man to think of something like that? I was very proud of myself. Well, anyway, I got the food and bought the bathing suit, and I went back to the place where we were staying, and I was unloading the food, and I said, oh, by the way, wife, today I bought you a bathing suit. Well, my wife spun around, she looked at me, and her eyes were on fire, and she said, just like my father. And she likes her father, but they have a little bit of friction sometimes. She said, just like my father. Every year he used to bring home cards that he never asked us if we liked them. He just told us he'd like them. He used to bring home clothes and tell us that we liked them. He never asked. He was like my father. I was startled. I took a step back, and I thought about that for a minute. She stared at me, and I said, wait a minute. And she said, what? I said, could this have anything to do with a red Mustang convertible? She had to stop and think for a minute. She said, yes, I think it does, as a matter of fact. What did that mean? When I brought that red Mustang convertible home to her, and when she came out and looked at it, what happened to her unconsciously? All these negative memories flooded into her heart. Do you understand? Did she know what was happening? She didn't know. It just brought up something from the past that was very negative. And every time she looked at that car, all these negative memories flooded into her mind. Now, guess who was responsible to figure all that out? Me, and who else? You. You are responsible to figure out things like that in your wife. Isn't that amazing? You are responsible to pick up those clues and figure out what's going on in her heart. Wow. Well, do you get the idea? You and I are responsible for the emotional atmosphere of our home. Let's go ahead and look at another area. I would also propose that you and I are responsible for the financial atmosphere of our home. The financial atmosphere. We won't look at it right now, but this would be backed up by 1 Timothy 5:8, where it says that any man who does not provide for his own home is worse than an unbeliever. Basically, what I'm going to propose is that you and I, as a man, are responsible for the financial atmosphere of our home. Now, fortunately for you, I teach in reality rather than idealism. Reality is that we are in a two-income society. That's the way it is. So I'm not going to say anything about women working or not. Some women need to work today just to stay out of mischief, all right? So, seriously, I mean, there's a lot not to do. Now, whether your wife works or not, guess who that is up to? It's not up to me. It's up to you and your wife. And you'll have to decide and look at the situations and see whether it is right or not. So that's not the issue, whether a wife works today. Some need to. However, I am going to point out a principle that's very important. And that is, a principle in this area is, that the man's income, should be able to pay for at least the basic necessities of the home. The male's income should be able to pay for at least the basic necessities of the home, without the wife having to work or pay for that. If he can do that, then everything's okay. But if the wife's income becomes necessary for the basic necessities, then there are going to be consequences, and they'll be negative. What would be those basic necessities of a home? What would be one? One would be shelter or the home. What would be another one? Food. Clothing, basic clothing, not necessarily luxury, although I don't know what the difference is. And finally, transportation or an auto, something like that. All right? Now, you may come up with others, but this will give us an idea of what we mean. Basically, I'm going to say that the male's income needs to provide for at least these basic necessities. And if a man's income can do that, without the wife being necessary or her income being necessary, it's going to be okay. You can work it out. No problem. However, if the wife's income becomes necessary to provide for these, then there are going to be certain consequences that will flood into your family. I'm pretty sure they're predictable. I'm pretty sure you can't escape them. Would you like to know what they are? Let me tell you what they are. First of all, if the wife's income becomes necessary for these basic necessities, there will be a loss of respect in the wife toward her husband. Also, there will be an attitude of resentment that will begin to rise in her. She will begin to resent. Interesting, the physical relationship between the man and the woman will go downhill. And finally, the woman will begin to get tough to a degree. She'll lose a certain amount of her gentleness and her tenderness, and she'll get tough. Now, if that's right, if I'm correct in this, is that a heavy price to pay for those dollars? That there'll be a loss of respect in the woman toward the man, that there'll be an attitude of resentment rise in her, that the physical relationship will be going downhill, and also that she'll begin to get tough. Is that a high price to pay for some dollars? I think it's a pretty high price, and I'm pretty sure this is true. I'm pretty sure these consequences will flood in if the wife becomes necessary, her income becomes necessary for these things. I've had men call me months after the seminar and say, doggone it, I've been trying to get out of that, and I can't get out of it. It works.
or it works against me. They've been trying to avoid those consequences. Let me mention one thing, very important. If a man gets laid off or is sick, well, a woman will jump in and she will work and there won't be a problem because she'll be moving into what role? She'll move into the helper role. It won't be a problem. She understands that, all right, if she's laid off or sick. However, if it goes on and on, and the husband ceases to look for work, guess what will happen? Then all these things come flooding in. But temporarily, no problem. Okay, let me show you how this works out. I had a friend one time that wanted to go to seminary. He was a godly young man. And he was helping his wife finish up her last year of nursing school. Now, the seminary that he wanted to go to happened to have a hospital that was two blocks away from the seminary. And he used to come to his wife and say, you know, wife, I really feel that we should go to seminary. And if we go there, there's a hospital just two blocks away. You'd be able to work there as a nurse, help me get through, and afterwards I could go in the ministry and we could really serve the Lord. Well, the wife always said, no, I do not want to go to seminary. I don't want you to go to seminary, and I definitely don't want to work at that hospital. Well, he could not understand that because she was a very godly young woman. She truly loved Jesus Christ, and she wanted him to be in the ministry. It was a very big deal to her. He couldn't understand it. But anyway, weeks and months went by. Well, one night in the month of May, they were sitting around their table, and the husband said to the wife, what? I've got something exciting to tell you. And she said, what's that? He said, we are going to seminary. In fact, we're going this September. It was right May, at May at that time. And she said, oh, really? And he said, yeah. I've been thinking what I can do. I can work overtime all summer. I can save the money, put it aside. I think that'll get us started. I can work part-time during the year, and then I can also work full-time every summer, and I'm pretty sure we can make it. And if we just run out of money, well, I can just drop out for a semester or two and earn enough to keep going. So we're going to go. And she said, oh, well, okay. No response. Well, they went to bed that night, but the next morning, she woke up early. She woke up first, and she turned over, and she began to shake him, and she said, get up, get up. You know, we're going to seminary now. We got a lot of things to do. We got to sublet the apartment. We got to get packed. Come on, come on. This is exciting. Move, move, move. Now, gentlemen, what had happened? Now she was all excited. Why was she excited now? Because what had that man done the night before? He didn't even realize what he was doing. What had he done the night before? He had accepted responsibility for what? For the finances. He'd take it off whose shoulders? Off her shoulders and put it where? On his shoulders. Do you understand? He didn't even know what he was doing, but he did it. When he did it, it freed her. Now be careful. Which role did it free her to move into? She's buying a dream. No, helper is a worker. A companion buys dreams and the hopes of a man. We normally get this backward until we think about it a little bit. Now she was moving into the companion role. Honey, if that's what you want to do, then that's what I want to do. However, the story wasn't over. Because just 1 week later, I think it's maybe a couple of weeks later, they were sitting around the same table, and the wife said, honey, I got something to tell you. And he said, oh, really? What's that? And she said, well, I don't know if you know it, but there's a hospital just two blocks away from the seminary. What I could do is help you get through the seminary. Now, which role had she moved into? She'd also moved into the helper. And you know that's what they did? They went to seminary in September, and they got through seminary. They worked for 2 years, and then she dropped out. She stopped working and had two babies. And just last month, they left for India. But gentlemen, that's how it works out. He didn't even know what he was doing, but what had he done? He'd simply done what? Accepted the responsibility on his shoulders. And that freed the woman to do what? To move into being a what? A woman. And that's what happens when you take that financial pressure off a woman. Let me mention, if you are in business for yourself and your wife keeps your books, I would check and decide whether you want to keep doing that. It's okay for some women, they can handle it. Other women, it just drives them up a wall. They do not want to know what's going on. They can't handle it. Many men really shred their marriage because they let their wife know what's going on financially. And sometimes, and you understand, that's up to you to decide what you want to do and what's right for your woman. But some men, it's not the correct thing to do. You need to take them out of the finances and free them to get on with being a woman. And other women, it's no problem. They want to know what's going on, so you have to decide in your own family. Okay, how's it going? So far, you are responsible for the entire financial atmosphere of your home. You are in charge of the entire emotional atmosphere of your home. How's it going, gentlemen? It gets worse. Let's look at another one. Yes. I'm going to propose that you are also responsible for the sexual attitude or response of your home. Now, you'll notice there's a lot more verses to prove this one. All right? Basically, what I'm saying is here that if your physical relationship with your wife is anything less than you desire, you are the problem. Did you hear that? I better say that again. If your physical relationship is anything less than you desire, you are the problem. Now, if you're the problem, what are you? What else are you also? You're also the solution. Okay, now here, many, many men would disagree with me and say, no, fella, you missed it here. You don't know my wife. I said, I don't need to know your wife. I'm going to tell you, if you don't like your physical relationship with your wife, you're the problem and you're also the solution. All right? Let me bring up three arguments against this, or three things that would show why this is true. First would be that first when a man would come and say, no, you've missed it here. My wife simply is not interested. She's not interested in this area at all. Not interested. So I'm not the problem. Well, I have to answer back to you and say, well, I will agree perhaps she's not interested now. That I'll buy. But I will not buy that she's not interested in this area. She is interested in this area, and I know it. I know it from Scripture, from at least two places. One would be 1 Corinthians 7, 3 and 4. We won't look at it right now. But there in 3, it says that the wife is to fulfill her physical duty to her husband. But guess what 4 says? That the husband is to fulfill his physical duty to his wife, which to me seems to say that she has an interest in that area. But even more important than that was Genesis 3:16, which we looked at last night, that I proposed, that God told the woman, every time you have a baby, it's going to be extremely painful. And her first thought would be to move away from her husband physically. And yet, what did God say? He said what? Yet, I'm going to place into you what? A desire for your husband. And I'm proposing that was a natural, healthy desire for a husband. What I'm saying from that is that every baby girl that is born with a natural, healthy instinct to want to have a physical relationship with her future husband. That's what I'm proposing. Okay? So, yes, your wife was born interested. Now, this natural, healthy desire can be damaged, or it can even be ruined, as the case may be. However, if this natural, healthy desire is damaged or even ruined, even then, I know who did it. Isn't that amazing? Because there's only one of two men, or two men, who can destroy a woman in this area, who can destroy this natural, healthy, or damage this natural, healthy instinct in a woman. And I think you know who they are. Who are they? Who's one? One is the father, and who's the other one? It's the husband. That's it, gentlemen. There are no other two men in the entire world who can affect a woman in this area, who can damage her. Even if she is physically assaulted or raped, if she has had a halfway decent relationship with her daddy, she can live through that. She can make it. Okay? So no, these are the only two men who can tear a woman down in this area. And if you are the husband, you are one of those men who can help walk her out of it. Let's bring up something else. If you tell me that your wife is definitely not interested at all in this area, that she's not functioning at all, then I know for sure who the problem is of those two men. You want to guess who it is? If the wife is not functioning at all in this area, guess who the problem is of those two men? It is the father. What I'm going to propose is that a husband does not have that much influence in this area to totally destroy a woman. If she's had anywhere halfway decent relationship with her daddy, the husband can't tear her down totally here. It is only her father who can destroy her totally in this particular area. So if your wife is not functioning at all, then I would propose the problem is her father. When you married her, she was hurting already. Now, you might have increased that hurt. I'll add that, you know, I'll say that. But no, you can't tear a woman totally down in this area. Now, let me show you how that works out, how a father can really hurt a woman. I know a young woman right now that was affected this way. It was one of my best friends who got married. It's an interesting fellow. I was just staying with him the other night in Euless. It was very nice to be with him. I'm having a lot of fun with all these people I give illustrations on. They know about the illustrations, in case you're wondering. I don't mention their names all the time. But I was staying with this couple, and this man got married to a gal several years ago, and they got married, and their physical relationship just did not work out. I mean, I guarantee it didn't work out, he told me. Now, he could not figure it out. He was healthy, she was healthy. He was kind of cute, she was real cute. He liked her a lot, and she liked him a lot. I mean, it should work out. But months went on, and nothing, it just didn't work out. Well, after a while, he came to his wife and said, "Wife, we seem to have a problem in the physical area. Have you noticed?" And she said, "Well, I think I have, as a matter of fact." He said, "Well, I would propose that I'm not the problem. I would propose that you're the problem, because," he said, "I'm definitely interested. In fact," as he said, "I'm interested right now, if you have any interest. But basically, I'm interested." And she said, "Oh, really?" And she said, "Well, what do you propose we do with it?" He said, "Well, what I want you to do is I want to sit down, I want to have some coffee right now, and I want you and I to talk." And she said, "What do you mean? What are we going to talk about?" And he said, "I don't care. I just want you to tell me about yourself, because there's something wrong here, and I don't know what it is, but I just want to talk." Now, that's an unusual man, wouldn't you say, who would talk to his wife? Well, anyway, I mean, seriously talk. I mean, you know, ask for things. Well, they sat down and had coffee, drinking coffee, and she never had anybody talk to her or listen, so she'd start talking. Ah, she'd have a great time, man. He's going, you know, drinking coffee. Well, nights went on. I mean, a lot of nights and a lot of coffee. The guy was getting sick. But anyway, she was talking. She'd having a great time. Nobody ever listened to her. You know, it was wonderful. Finally, several nights later, the story finally came up. She had forgotten it. She just remembered it. But in all this talking, it finally came up. What the story was, as she was growing up as a young girl, her daddy liked to go to taverns or bars, whatever the case may be, whatever you call them here. And that was his social life. He went all the time. When she was about 16 years old, he began taking her with him. Now, he liked to run around the bar and talk with his buddies. And she happened to be a very well-developed young woman and a very attractive young woman. And so while he was running around talking to his other buddies would come up to her and begin patting her in the wrong places and whispering things in her ears that they shouldn't be saying to a young woman. Wow. What do you think happened in that young girl's heart toward her daddy? Resentment and hurt. Pain. This one who is her protector. This one who she looks up to is leaving her to be degraded. Did she know that she was feeling this toward her daddy? I don't think so. She couldn't recognize that. But it was coming in unconsciously. Also, what did she begin thinking about men? Dirty, beer-breathed old men. You understand? It's just awful. And went on for several years. Well, when my friend married her, and he came toward her physically, what happened to her unconscious? Dirty, beer-breathed old man. And you see, she couldn't function well. Did she understand all this was happening? She didn't know it. But she could not respond well. Well, my friend is an unusual man. He thought about that for several weeks. He took it, and he thought about it. Finally, he came back to his wife and said, "Wife?" And she said, "Yes." "Wife, I have a deal for you, you know, in the physical area." She said, "Yes." He said, "You know what I'm going to do?" "What?" "I'm going to win you." And she said, "Oh, really? What does that mean?" And he said, "Well, I have a need every once in a while for a physical relationship. I need you to perform every once in a while." But he said, "I'm going to ask you to perform as seldom as possible." And he said, "I'm going to win you. I am going to woo you. I am going to pursue you. I'm going to chase you. I'm going to make you love me so much it'll be embarrassing." And she looked at him and said, "Good luck." Well, this man was a very unusual man. He did it. He set out. He asked her to perform every once in a while, but otherwise he chased her. He pursued her. He cherished her. He cared for her, and he won her. I know, because in ever so discreet a way, she told me, with him standing right there, she said, "I'm good now." And she said, "It's all because of this man right here." You want to know how long it took him to win that girl, that woman? It took him 4 years. From the night he said it to the night she agreed he had done it. Does that sound too long? Think you could hold out that long? I think you could, because what's the alternative? There's no alternative. 4 years of pursuing, or 20 years of misery. What's the alternative? There is none. I think he's just a wise man, an unusual man who would talk and care. But now he's done so good, it's really embarrassing being around them. I think he overdid it. I do not know. But he seems to be a happy man. Okay. Well, no matter what, gentlemen, you are responsible to figure these things out. Let me mention another sensitive area, a couple of sensitive areas, but one is, in my area, I'm running across something that's kind of sad, and that is, of the female population where I minister, 20% of the females have been involved in incest. 20%. Now, I never heard of that when I was down here in Texas, but I'm beginning to believe there's 20% down here, too. That means all women, the whole population, that they've been touched by their father, their stepfather, their brother, an uncle, a cousin, or a close family friend. A gentleman, a woman cannot handle that. So guess what she does with the memories? She buries them. Are they gone? No, they're still there. And every time her husband comes toward her, all these thoughts flood up of dirty and everything else. She may not know it. Quite often she does not know it. Well, guess what? If 20% is correct, and I'm beginning to think maybe it's correct. There's 200 men here tonight. 20% would be how many wives would be involved, have been involved in incest, the men right here tonight? 40 wives. I'm pretty sure that might be true. I don't know. I'm just picking a number, but it might be true. You might have one of those wives, and you might not know it. And guess what? She might not know it either. It's been buried. She can't handle it anymore. But if you do have one of those wives, and she has buried it, are you free of it now? Are you freed of it? No, it's still affecting you. Guess what you're responsible to do? You're responsible to help her surface it so she can deal with it. So she can be freed. That goes back up to the emotional. Isn't that amazing? You're responsible to help her bring this up to the surface again and be freed by both forgiving the person who did it to her and also being cleansed by Jesus Christ. That's what you're responsible to do. Many of you have never asked. I had a man in Minneapolis, a man about 50 years old. He came up on Saturday morning after the session. He had tears in his eyes, big tears. Not tears of hurt or pain, but tears of I don't know what. And he said, sir, I want to thank you. I said, what? He said, well, you told me to ask my wife last night, or told us to ask my wife about incest. He said, I asked her, and she said yes. He said, I never knew it. She told me she's been waiting 20 years for me to ask. He said, we cried, and we cried, and we cried. He said, I think my marriage is starting today. He said, I just held her and told her it didn't matter to me. I loved her. But she said she felt dirty. And he said, now I see I've got to lead her out. I said, can you do it? He said, I think I can do it. Oh, that's precious. You and I need to begin to ask our wives questions and take time to listen. It takes a lot of coffee sometimes. It really does. There's one other sensitive area that I want to bring up, and it's kind of a rough one, and that is that in my ministry, I've also been running across more and more men who are not performing in this area anymore. Men are not performing in the sexual area anymore. Now, that's kind of rough. And I want to bring it up because I think there's men in here who are not performing in this area anymore. I want to bring it up for two reasons. Number one, I want you to know that you're not weird. That's an embarrassing thing, and we begin to think there's something wrong with us. Now, if you're one of those men, it's something that's happening in our society. I do not believe it's happened before. It's a new occurrence. All right? And if another reason that I bring it up is because I want you to realize it doesn't have to be. It's not God's desire for us not to perform. He wants us to perform in this area. It doesn't have to be. Let me tell you why it's happening in this society. I'm pretty sure I know why. And that is that we men are losing our sense of who we are and what we are. A man has been designed by God to work with his hands on the land. It's very important. Our society no longer works with our hands. We work with our minds, supposedly, and we just bring in cash. Cash does not give a man a sense of value whatsoever. Some men can handle it, and they get through their life just working with cash. But some men can't. And they lose their orientation of who they are. And they feel like a failure, even though they may still be bringing in cash. But they feel like a failure. Therefore, in this area, they feel so bad they can't fail in this area. It's too sensitive, it's too tender, and so they quit. Unconsciously, you just move away. Do you understand what I'm saying? The mind just blocks out and says, no, I'm not going to risk it here. And they say they're no longer interested. Now, I happen to know very much about this because I have experienced it. All right? I have a very healthy relationship with my wife. However, one time several years ago, I went through a period of great darkness and a period of great failure, as the case may be. And I got disoriented as a person. Not crazy, just disoriented. For I no longer knew what I was and whether I had value. And my physical relationship evaporated. I mean, evaporated. I was startled at that until I realized what was happening. It was because of my attitude toward myself that it just disappeared. And I'm pretty sure that's happening with men in here. I don't know how many, 10, 20, 30, I do not know. But I'd say it's a lot. Now, if that's true, if what I'm saying is true, if it's really coming from our self-image and how we see ourselves, then what's the answer to correct it? Do we have to have sex seminars and learn new techniques? No, because you see, that's not the problem. If we want this area to come back, what do we have to do? We have to come to find out what it means to be a man. You understand? Once you come back to understand what it means to be a man, this area will show up again. Once you come to respect yourself as a man, it'll just show up naturally. And that excites me because that's what this seminar is all about. Learn how to become a man, how to become proud of yourself. And I'll propose to you, it'll just show up naturally. But if you're involved in that, I want you to know what's happening. You are not weird. It's something, it's a phenomenon happening in our society. It's also happening as our wives are going to work, and quite often they earn more than we do. And it's really rough on a man. It's a rough on a male ego. Well, so much, I got to get on with it. But you get the idea. No matter what, do you begin to see in this area, it is you and I who are responsible. Let's look at another one, another area, that another problem that might cause us problems here, and that might be your approach toward the whole area. Your approach toward the physical relationship might be what's causing you trouble in your family. Let's look at that in the book of 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians. If you had the little blue sheet, it would be in there on the back. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. This would be another problem that might cause a sexual relationship to disintegrate. It says in verse 2 of chapter 4, "For you know what commandments we gave you by the authority of the Lord Jesus. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that is, that you abstain from sexual immorality." All right. He's telling us that as a husband we should abstain from sexual immorality. What would be the two immoralities that you would believe that he's talking about? What would be one? One would be adultery of a married person participating outside of his marriage. What would be the other immorality? Fornication of an unmarried person participating in a physical relationship with a woman. How many would agree that that's what God is telling us to stay away from, those immoralities? Okay, I would too. Guess what? He's not talking about either one of those. I think you're going to be surprised at what the immorality is, and I'm very certain that you're going to be surprised at who it is with. Let's go ahead and read it. Verse 3, and again it says, "And this is the will of God, your sanctification, that is, that you abstain from sexual immorality. That is, that each of you know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in lustful passion, like the Gentiles who do not know God." Well, this is very interesting. Verse 4 tells us that this immorality that God is telling us to stay away from is with whom? It is with our wife. Isn't that amazing? You can have immorality with your wife. And in verse 5 tells us exactly what the immorality is. What is it? It's having an attitude of lustful passion toward her. Isn't that amazing? You can be immoral with your wife. It's by having an attitude of lustful passion. What does that mean? It does not mean the positions you may choose to use with your wife. I do not think God is so concerned about that. What's he talking about? Not positions, but what? Your attitude. That is, if you're just using her for a physical release, a lustful passion, that is immoral. That is immorality with your wife. Isn't that amazing? I'll say it in a very crude way because I want to communicate a very crude thought. That is, just using your wife like a piece of meat. That is immorality. God says that you and I are to not treat her that way, but care for her being, not just her body. Another interesting thing, again, who is God holding accountable? In this passage, who is God holding accountable for the physical relationship? Isn't it amazing? It's you and I. You're not going to find any verses for the lady. You and I are responsible for this area. So, it may be your approach. You may just have a bad approach, just using her body. A woman will pick that up. She cannot handle it if you just care for her body and not her being, who she is. All right, so that may be another problem why this area is going downhill. Again, it's us. We are the ones who have to change here. Let's try one last area that may be giving us problems here, and that may be our attitude toward this area, toward the physical relationship. How many men in here can admit that you grew up basically feeling that sex was dirty? How many in here can admit that? I'm surprised most men do not admit it. I do not know why. Because I don't know how else you can grow up, unless you have an unusually healthy family. When you and I are growing up, little boys take us around behind buildings, right, and talk and tell lewd and obscene stories. We take magazines and we show them behind the deals and we make jokes about people. I don't know how a guy can think that sex isn't dirty the way we are raised or the way we just grow up. All right? So I'd propose that you may have a bad attitude or less than best attitude in this area. You may still think it's dirty. But let me ask, do you think God thinks it's dirty? Do you think God thinks it's dirty? I don't think so. In fact, I know not. Let's look at his attitude toward the physical relationship, and I think you'll be kind of surprised with it. It's rather healthy. Look in Proverbs chapter 5. In Proverbs chapter 5, we'll pick up God's attitude toward the physical relationship. Verse 12. It starts, and it says, or 15 actually, it says, "Drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well." I think it's speaking symbolically about our wives here. And it says, "Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? No. Let them be yours alone, and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress, and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of a man are always before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths." Now, let me ask, this gives God's attitude toward the physical relationship between a man and a wife. Let me ask, is he for it or against it? Sounds to me like he's for it. Is he just a little bit for it or a whole lot for it? Sounds to me like a whole lot. He seems to have a rather great attitude toward the whole thing. I love verse 19. "As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breasts satisfy you at all times." And gentlemen, that's rather descriptive, wouldn't you say? And I'd say God's into this whole thing. Now, he says, "Let her breasts always satisfy you." Is he saying that her breasts are satisfying? Is that passage saying that her breasts are satisfying? No, it's not saying that at all. It's simply saying what to the man? Oh, again, who's all this addressed to? Who's being held accountable again? You and I, gentlemen. There's not going to be anybody else. It's not the woman. He says, "Let her breast satisfy you." Now, you know how we, most of us, decide whether breasts are satisfying? We take a tape measure or some such thing. And we take measurements, and, you know, if it passes a certain standard, that's pretty good. If not, nothing there. Okay. Now, that's our way of doing it, but God has no place for that. He says, "Let her breast satisfy you." How can he say, "Let her breast satisfy you," no matter how well or how poorly endowed your wife is? How can he tell us to do that? He's simply telling us to do what? What's the mark of a man? He simply makes a what? You simply make a decision. That's what he's telling you and I to do. Simply decide to be satisfied with her breast. That's all. Doesn't matter how well or how poorly she's endowed. Simply decide to enjoy her breast. That's all. Isn't that amazing? It also goes on further. It says, and also be exhilarated with her love. Now, does that say, does be exhilarated always with her love, does that say that she is an exhilarating lover? It absolutely does not say that at all. It says that you and I are to be exhilarated with love. She may not be very exciting at all, as the case may be. So God is simply telling us to do what? What's he telling us to do? Make a decision. Get on with it and enjoy the whole thing, is what he's saying. Get kind of excited and jump around and have a great time. Isn't that what he's saying? Now, if you do that, if you'll simply do what God says, you know good things might happen. I mean, if your wife and you are not making, but if you decide to follow this out and get, you know, kind of get excited and just jump into the whole thing, you know, if that goes on for a while, a year or so, your wife might begin to get curious about what's going on. I mean, really, you know, she's kind of determined not to like this, but if you're jumping around having a great time, after a while she might say, maybe I'm missing something here, you know, this guy seems to like this whole thing. I'm serious. And after a while she might say, maybe I ought to check into it, you know, maybe I'm missing something. You know, sometimes if we'll just do what God says, I think things can kind of work out in interesting ways. All right? So I propose that you and I could possibly think about getting on with it. Now, no matter what, would you agree that God seems to have a healthy attitude? I think so, but I still think we don't buy that. Even though we say it with our mouth, I don't think we buy it in our heart. Let me tell you why. I think if you and I really get down to it, that we really would believe, if you could be honest with yourself, that if you were involved with your wife sometime, I mean, you know, really involved, I mean, totally involved, and you could see God looking into your house at that moment while you're involved, I think most of us feel that God would look in and say, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were, you know, doing that. I'll be back in just a little while. I think if we were honest, that's what we'd have to admit. That's basically what we think. It's just not something you know, check into. However, is that what the passage says? Does it say God would be embarrassed to look in on you at that time? No, it says the ways of man are always before the eyes of the Lord. It says God is for it. You know what what I think God does? God can read the thoughts of your mind. If you begin getting interested in your wife, I think God says, oh, excellent idea, excellent idea. Oh, yes, it's a good approach toward her. I appreciate it. Oh, excellent, good technique. Oh, no, don't do that. That's not good. No. Now, many men, when I speak that way, they would propose that I'm being sacrilegious. I do not think I'm being sacrilegious. Does that seem to be the attitude that God has here? Is he interested? Is he observing in this passage? I think so. I don't think he's embarrassed at all. I think we've got a problem. We don't look at it correctly. I think he's very involved, and I think he's observing. I think he observes so much that sometimes when I'm involved with my wife, I'm tempted just to bring a chair up next to the bed and say, well, you're here anyway. Why don't you relax? Now, gentlemen, can you handle that? I think you may as well, because I think he's there. And, gentlemen, he can see through blankets. I mean, there's no way to cover this whole thing up. It is a holy event. And I would like you to think that through. Well, no matter what, would you agree that God holds us responsible in this area? Whether you like it or not, it would seem to be there. All right? So, how are we doing now? You and I are now responsible for the entire physical relationship with our wife, also the finances of our home, and the entire emotional atmosphere of our home with our wife and children. How's it going, man? It gets a little bit worse.